I got accused of a crime I didn't commit, and I was looking at a life sentence, being charged with attempted murder stemming from a fight at a party. I was defending myself, throwing punches, and turns out the guy that I was throwing punches at, who had been on top of me, was being stabbed by the guys that were attacking him in that fight. So everyone at the party came out when they heard the noise, and all they saw was me getting out from underneath this guy, throwing punches at him as I was standing up.
Welcome everyone to Learn, Speak, Teach, powered by Baubert Marketing, LLC. If you love to learn, be inspired, and succeed, we're here to speak and teach. I'm your host, Ben Albert. I believe if you're not living, you're dying. If you're not growing, you're withering. And if you're not engaged, you can turn this off right now. Because we here at LST are lifelong learners. And listen, I'm not your guru. I'm an ordinary guy on a journey to learn from the experts. My goal is to host each conversation with a beginner's mindset, learn, and let the experts speak and teach their truths. Join us! Oh yeah, and don't forget to subscribe. This episode is brought to you completely free. Get some stake in the game here. My fee for the show only takes a few moments. If you gain value from the episode, personally share with a friend and explain your favorite part. Bonus points. Please leave us a review on Apple, Google Podcasts, or anywhere you listen to the show. All right, let's get started. Welcome everyone to Learn, Speak, Teach. I am here with Sean Michael Crane. Sean, brother, what's up? How are you today?
I'm doing great, man. Thank you for having me.
Dude, I'm excited. I'm going to read your bio, but I think the story is going to speak for itself. You know, you're a life coach, you're a TEDx speaker, a best-selling author, spent 2,000 days in prison developing self-mastery, something you teach now. You teach life-changing principles that help business people elevate performance in personal and professional lives. Inmate number AN1137 to accomplished life coach, TEDx speaker, really just a badass dude, great dude. And when I first heard your story, the first thing that came to mind is the world needs to know it. The world needs to hear it. So I didn't prepare any questions for you today, Sean. I want to give you an opportunity to speak, and the questions will just kind of come to light as we go. But let's get started. So you were an inmate for, 5 to 10 years? How the hell did that happen, man?
Yeah, it's a crazy story, honestly. I got accused of a crime I didn't commit, and I was looking at a life sentence, being charged with attempted murder stemming from a fight at a party. When I was 23, I went to a party in a really beautiful area of Santa Barbara where I grew up, known as the Mesa. It's overlooking the ocean. You can see the pier and all these beautiful homes right on the cliff. And we were drinking, and there was a lot of people there, and a fight broke out. And I got involved in the fight. I was getting attacked by a couple guys. It was really just crazy how it all transpired. And in the midst of that, defending myself, trying to figure out, you know, was I getting jumped? Were these people attacking me? What was going on? I was defending myself, throwing punches. And turns out the guy that I was throwing punches at, who had been on top of me, was being stabbed by the guys that were attacking him in that fight. So everyone at the party came out when they heard the noise, and all they saw was me getting out from underneath this guy, throwing punches at him as I was standing up, and he didn't get up. And then I got to the street where my friend was standing. I was covered in blood from head to toe. And he looked at me in horror. He said, "Sean, you're covered in blood. What the hell, man?" And in that moment, I knew something really bad had happened, but I couldn't make sense of it. It was happening so quickly, and there was so much chaos going on that we fled because people are screaming. We hear sirens coming. We know we were just involved in a fight, and most people don't stick around to really try to talk their way out of it. You know, I knew that I was involved, but I also knew I didn't stab anybody.
And you're drunk. You're drunk, right? You're not thinking straight.
No, I mean, at that time I was just 23, and I was just a wild kid, not a bad person, but you know, you go to these parties and your goal is to drink and have fun and be wild and chase some girls. And that's where my mind was at that moment in my life. I never thought going to that party that I was going to end up in cuffs the next day in the backseat of a cop car charged with attempted murder. It seemed too surreal because at that time in my life, by no means was I living up to my potential, but I wasn't a bad person. I wasn't a criminal. You know, I had a job. I had a decent life. But it just shook my whole world up, man. So then I was officially charged the next day and I was looking at a life sentence.
That happened fast, man. So it's tough because I want to ask, what were you doing at the party in the first place? But I recognize everything's in probability, right? If you get in a car drinking, you might get in an accident. If you do something, if you're at that party, you might get tried for a crime you didn't commit. Now, how did they try you for that crime? Like, how does that work? If you didn't commit the crime, why'd you go to jail, man?
Yeah. And, you know, let me backtrack for a second.
Please.
It's really important to understand, how did I end up at that party? You know, yeah. Who was I at that time in my life? And it really is part of the story. You know, growing up in Santa Barbara, there was opportunities in abundance. You know, there's a lot of wealth here, a lot of influential people. I could have done anything I wanted with my life. I could have been a doctor, a lawyer, an airline pilot. I wanted to be a professional baseball player. That was my goal. I loved sports growing up. I would go out in the backyard and throw the ball on the roof for hours after school and chase it around. And that's all I thought about. You know, at 9 years old, my favorite TV show was SportsCenter. I would watch SportsCenter at night and watch the highlights of any game. Baseball, basketball, football. I was just obsessed. And then at age 14, my whole life changed. My dad went to prison. My mom left us and abandoned us due to her drug habit. And, you know, all this dark side of my family emerged. You know, I realized my parents had been battling addiction my whole life. They're barely holding it together. And the facade of what I thought we had, you know, it emerged. I realized that my life wasn't this picture perfect upbringing, that there was a lot of dark secrets and things going on behind closed doors that I didn't know of. So I was really hurt by that. I didn't know how to deal with that pain. And from 14 till 23, when I was at that party, I really lost myself. You know, I went through high school. I never played sports. I felt ashamed of who I was. And I just started developing my own bad habits, turned into drugs and alcohol to cope with the pain, stopped going to school. I was angry. I hung out with kids that were doing things similar in my life because we had more in common than my friends who were playing sports or getting scholarships to college. So very quickly, I changed, you know, to a completely different person. So by the time I ended up at that party, I'd somewhat got my life together and I was working and I was staying out of trouble, but by no means was I happy or living as an authentic version of myself. I felt very much disconnected from who I once thought I was. So then being at that party, I really just had the attitude of like, I don't care, you know? And so that's why I got involved in that fight. You know, it wasn't my fight to be involved with. And I saw these guys arguing and I got close enough to the point where now I'm a part of the fight. You know, I wasn't saying anything to the other party. I wasn't attacking anybody, but I was there in the midst of it, sticking my nose in someone else's business. So then when this melee breaks out, the guys on the other side assume that I was involved. I'm standing right there, you know, watching what's about to go down. And so somebody comes my way to attack me, and out of the corner of my eye, I just get blindsided by a group of people. You know, they're fighting each other, but I'm getting pulled into this melee. And we slammed into a car and we fell on the ground. Nobody saw that. Nobody saw this initial attack. They heard the commotion and then they came out, and they came out to see me getting throwing punches at this guy that had been stabbed multiple times. So when I got arrested, the police had come and investigated the crime. And everyone at the party said, we saw this guy named Sean attacking this guy. We saw him throwing punches at him. Mm-hmm. So immediately the cops think, oh, we have our suspect. Like, all these people are saying, we saw Sean fighting with this guy. And that's what happened. They wrote up the police report to make me look like this really, you know, violent person who was assaulting someone. I didn't have a weapon. No one saw a weapon, but the police wrote it up using the word striking instead of punching. So when you say, oh, he was striking down at the guy, that leaves it open to interpretation. So I had all that stacked against me. I had multiple people at the party saying I was fighting with him. The police wrote up the report thinking I was the person who did it. So they made it look really bad. And I'll never forget my first day in court. I go in and I'm shackled up. You know, I'm scared. I'm in disbelief that this is taking place. And the news press is there. They're taking pictures. They're trying to see me and get a good photo for the news press and put my picture on the front page of the paper. And so then I finally get to talk to my lawyer and I'm relieved. I just want to know what's going on. I want some help, man. I want some type of, you know, reassurance that it's going to be okay and the truth is going to come out. And my lawyer walked up to me and all she said was, the DA and judge are up there right now. They're talking about amending your charges to homicide. The victim's brain dead. And
it's not a promising statement.
No, those were the first words I heard, man. And my heart just dropped. I couldn't believe it. I thought they were maybe going to figure out a way to find out the truth and question me a little more, but they didn't. And from that moment forward, you know, I knew that I was going to prison. I knew that my life was changing rapidly. It was just a matter of how much time was I going to spend in prison and what was life going to be like if I did get out one day?
Wow. Okay. So one thing I'm curious about is that time in between actually getting sentenced into prison, because you're tried for a crime you didn't commit. I've only heard this through the grapevine. I haven't been through this experience, but they'll bully you into pleading your guilty, right? Was that a scenario where you got bullied into pleading guilty? Why did you plead guilty? Tell me about that interim period there.
Yeah, well, there's two things. So it's fear of being convicted, fear of more time in prison. You know, they play into your fear. And number two, you know, the district attorney is so powerful. They very rarely lose a case. You know, my district attorney's conviction rate was like 99%. You know, they don't lose in trial. They just don't. And the reason for that is most people that go to trial are guilty. You know, innocent people are convicted all the time. But if you look at the numbers, most people are guilty and they go to trial because they're either really stubborn or because their crime is so bad that the district attorney doesn't want to offer them any type of bargain. So they take it to trial and they give them the maximum penalty. The justice system, the court system is not in favor of the so-called accused or guilty party. It's not innocent until proven guilty. You're guilty until you're proven innocent. It's the opposite. So for me, I didn't think that I had a chance in trial to win. Based on what I saw as far as the police evidence, the police report, there was nobody coming to my aid. Even people at the party knew that I didn't do it. My best friend who I went to the party with, he didn't even tell them I didn't do it. He pretty much went along with with what the cops were saying because they charged him with accessory. He was so scared. Oh, you know, maybe he didn't realize that if I got found innocent, that means he's innocent too. But instead of doing that, he tried as hard as he could to separate himself from me and basically told the cops whatever they wanted to hear to paint a negative picture of me. He didn't say that I stabbed a guy because he knew I didn't. He was right there. He didn't say that I had a weapon or anything like that, but he did not try to help me at all. So I had all these things stacked against me, and I just knew that I was going to prison. My lawyers told me I was going to prison. It was just a matter of how long. And they came with a plea deal. They said, hey, if you don't go to trial and you don't fight this any longer, instead of attempted murder, we'll drop your charges to assault with a deadly weapon. We'll offer you a 7-year plea deal in prison in which you'll do 85% of that time. So I was looking at a minimum of 6 years, and that was the best that I was going to do. And when that happened, man, you know, you asked about the interim between being arrested and going to prison. It can be a long time. I was in county jail for 8 months before I was sentenced. So already I was going through a lot of personal things. I was going through a lot of, I was having a lot of revelations about myself and my life and having more clarity than I ever had before, you know, being thrown into a small little cement cell with no distractions, no phone, no TV, no jobs, no kids, no drugs and alcohol. Mm-hmm. Man, my mind started to come to life like never before. I started to have these thoughts, these feelings, this like connection to myself and to this world that I had lacked my entire life. So I felt like something really magical was honestly taking place, you know. And I could talk to you about the actual things that I went through in that cell prior to being sentenced. But by the time I did get sentenced, I knew definitively that it was what I needed to do. And I felt confident that I was going to go to prison and I was going to give my all to change my life and to come home and live, you know, the life that I felt in my heart I deserved.
That's powerful to be able to have that mindset at a young age. I know you've had plenty of time to think through this and compartmentalize some of the trauma and the struggle. And I'm wondering, really, how did it feel at that time? I mean, you didn't commit the crime. I could see why someone thought you did. Who's punching someone who's been stabbed unless they're the stabber? It makes no sense from an outside perspective. So all the stakes are against you. Everyone basically is saying you did it, and you're having to 6 years in prison. How did that feel? Did you really just go, hey, this is a blessing? Or in that moment, what was Sean thinking? Like, who was Sean at that time?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people, it's hard for a lot of people to understand how I was able to be so positive and find gratitude in my situation. But I did, you know, because at a young age, I felt very hopeful and motivated to achieve things in life. I had a vision. I had what I felt was a purpose, and I felt really certain that I could carry out that purpose with consistent effort. When my parents left us, I was broken, you know, and I really felt weak and fragile from 14 to 24. The drugs and alcohol didn't help, you know, not pursuing that vision did not help. And I just had so much like doubt, and I internally really hated myself for who I had become. So when I got to that cell, it was honestly like a safe haven. You know, early on, I didn't feel that way. I was demoralized. I was scared. I was shocked. But after a couple months, you know, of sobriety and a couple months to collect my thoughts, I started feeling like, okay, this isn't necessarily the end of my life. Like maybe somehow, some way, this could be the turning point that gives me, you know, a different direction in life, one that I was meant to travel. Like I just had to start creating, you know, this positive potential in my mind with my daily thoughts and self-talk, because it's pure survival at that point. Like if you don't do something to maintain day to day, you will go crazy. Being stuck in that cell, never leaving, 23, 24 hours a day in a cell that was so tiny, it's like living in a closet or a bathroom with another person, you know? And so you find these ways to go within yourself and to train your mind and to harden your mind that you don't have to out here. Like it's survival. You don't have to adapt in those ways out here because no one's put in those extreme environments. So for me, it was a mixture of just being exhausted in the way I was living and also survival day to day. And that was early on what I was focused on. It was get through the day, cling to hope, you know, do whatever I can to busy myself and kind of be distracted from reality. Mm-hmm. But over time, that turned into a lot of, you know, inspiration, a lot of gratitude, and gave me momentum going forward into my prison sentence.
I'm wondering, because so many of us at home are going through a prison sentence in our own lives, and we're causing it ourselves, whether it's drinking or not leaving a job where we're unhappy, or a lot of us are well put together, but their children are going through this struggle where maybe they're hanging out with the wrong people, doing the wrong things, starting to repeat things they might have even learned from us. Well, I don't want anyone to have to go to prison or spend any time to learn this kind of stuff. Well, what can me as just an ordinary human who, honestly, Sean, I drink too much. I drank on New Year's. I'll go and I'll take breaks from drinking, but I'm imperfect. I'm not completely sober, and I probably should be completely sober. And I'm just an ordinary guy who's driven to achieve things, but there's things holding me back. And so many of our listeners are that exact same person. What can we do that avoid 6 years in prison? Like what can I start today?
Yeah, I mean, that's really why I'm so passionate about coaching and sharing my message, is because most people are living below their potential. You know, most are not achieving at the level they're capable, and they're doing it to themselves, you know, and they're trapped inside this mental prison where fear, doubt, excuses, procrastination, you know, the belief that they have more time, all of these things prevent them from consistently being that person they want to be. So when I got locked in that cell, I saw all this as clear as day. And I was overcome with regret for the choices I had made in my life. I mean, the regret I experienced was so painful that it was worse than the potential life sentence I was facing.
Mm.
It was horrendous because I saw every choice and action that I took led me to be into that cell and led me to be in a lesser version of myself that I knew in my heart I was capable. So right now, if you went to the doctor next week and they said, hey, you know, you have terminal cancer, man, you're going to die in a couple of weeks, you would suddenly have that moment of clarity. And unfortunately, until you've gone through something that extreme, most people just can't even fathom what that's like. You know, we have this disbelief like we're going to live forever. You know, we don't realize that we're going to die and that our time here is temporary. So for me, in that moment in my cell, feeling that pain, knowing that it was all self-inflicted, I made a promise to myself that from that moment forward, no matter if I was in prison every day for the rest of my life or if I got out in 20 years, I was going to live as my true self. I was going to be so authentic and so like so pure and genuine to who I knew I could be. I was never going to deviate from that person again because it caused me so much harm knowing that I'd lived for 10 years just holding back, you know? And I'd ask myself, why did I hold back? Why didn't I live as that person in my heart I wanted to be? And it always comes back to either fear and doubt or a lack of understanding as to how our actions right now are going to make us feel later on in life when we look back on this journey. And so, you know, a lot of people say, I'll change tomorrow. I shouldn't drink as much. I need to exercise more. And the reason they're not is because there's a disconnect there. They don't realize like what they're doing to themselves. They don't know that pain that they're going to experience later on in life, looking back, wishing they would have lived differently. And at that point, there's no do-overs.
There's two things I want to touch on, and there isn't do-overs, and we don't. The first question I want to touch on is just on that. Like, how do I change my mindset? I know that's a vague question, but obviously I don't want to hit rock bottom to decide I'm there. Is there anything I could do to help pivot my mindset, change, and maybe take one small action to start realizing that I'm missing my potential and actually move towards it?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, you know, the two motivating factors for change are, you know, pain and then desire. So when people have a strong enough desire to achieve something, they take action. People also take action when the pain threshold reaches a certain point. But the problem is most people are stuck in the middle, right? This is your comfort zone. This is where things aren't painful enough to change and that desire is not strong enough to compel you to do something different. And they stay stuck there their entire life. So you don't have to go to prison. You don't have to go to the doctor and find out you're going to die to change, but you have to understand really what's at stake and what you want. So for somebody that wants more or they want to make a mental shift, what I help my clients do and people I work with is to get crystal clear on what that actually looks like. Like, let's map that out. Let's define, you know, Ben at his very best physically, mentally, spiritually, financially, every facet of your life. Let's map that out. What does Ben at his best look like in 5 years? You know, what is his health like? What is his relationships like? What are his daily actions like? What is his financial situation? What is he doing for work? And, you know, really just putting pen to paper and articulating that can create that desire. It can create that emotional connection to that outcome that you want. And so what I found is it's crucial to have as much detail as possible and to know exactly what target we're aiming for, because then every day now we have the choices and actions. You know, we have the decisions that we need to make to align to that person. And this is another challenge. Most people know in their heart what they want. They know the truth, but it seems so far away and it's daunting and it's scary. And, you know, how do we bridge that gap? How do we get from point A to point Z? Like, it just seems so far away. And honestly, man, there's only one way to do it. And everyone forgets this. It's literally a series of small baby steps, micro actions done consistently over time. And 10 years from now, you can either have a completely different life based on your commitment to those daily actions, or you could be the exact same. And the same amount of time is going to pass, but it's you just being able to recognize that small adjustments done consistently over time have a capability to massively transform your life and your life's outcomes.
Yeah, massive small action done over time. I mean, you're an athletic guy, right? You didn't get athletic overnight, I imagine.
This is 10 years of work, you know, and I discovered this when I was in my jail cell. So when I was in the county jail, I really had nothing. You know, you're living in a bathroom with another person. Like, that's the picture that. Picture your bathroom. Now put a bunk bed in there and you're living with another person. Like, that's how small it is.
Man,
I can touch both walls at the same time if I stretch my arms out.
Wow.
And so you're sitting there, you're in your white boxers, you have nothing, maybe a couple random books they've passed out, some writing paper, and that's all I had. And at the time, I got my hands on a small little pocket dictionary. So at this point, I realized I had to fight every day to improve myself and to like get out of that low point of my life. I had to do something through action to start building up my sense of, like, you know, confidence and that I could do something better with my life when I got out. And I just started by looking up words in my dictionary and keeping a log of new words I learned and their definition. And then I started using those words in my letters back home. And the reason I did this is because at that point in my life, I felt like I lacked intellect. Like, I knew I was street smart. I knew I had charisma and social skills, but I didn't feel that I was intelligent. And I was writing some letters back home and I kept asking my cellmate how to spell all these different words. And he got fed up with me and he actually threw the dictionary at me and said, look it up. And so at that point in my life, it was a very pivotal moment because I always took the easy way out in life. I always asked for help and tried to cut corners. And at this moment, I just said, okay, I'm going to do this. Like, watch what I do. You know, I was thinking that in my head to him. And I started looking up every single word and I just started memorizing these words. And I became, like, you know, enthralled in the fact that I could see and feel myself growing smarter and changing right there on the spot each and every day. And that little instance of not just saying, oh, screw it, doesn't matter, but no, I'm going to look at these words, I'm going to find something constructive to do every day, and I'm going to do it to the best of my ability. That gave me the confidence when I got to prison to enroll in college courses that they offered. They offered a correspondence program. And if I had never done that, I would have still believed I lacked intelligence. I still would have doubted myself and I wouldn't have changed. But it was just that small little baby step I took to move one step closer towards becoming more the person I wanted to be, not the person that I, you know, perceived myself to be in the past, that it had a massive impact on my self-identity and what I've done since in my life.
Yeah, the person you were meant to be. There's a consistent theme, and I was going to ask you earlier, I want to tie it in here. I mean, you mentioned how ending up in prison was mistakes that was a fault to your own. And then you mentioned all these baby steps and these actions to basically create a better person. I'm hearing like some massive amount, like an insane amount of extreme ownership and responsibility for everything in your life. And I'm wondering like where that came from, man. Do you think people should take that personal responsibility? How do you hone that responsibility? Is it something you learned in prison? Like, this is something that's hard for me to quite understand, just because it's so easy to blame someone else and they're so easy to blame an outside circumstance. And I know that's not right, but, you know, me and a lot of people still feel like you kind of still do it sometimes, you know? What's your experience with that? Because it seems like you take a lot of personal responsibility.
Yeah, absolutely. What I found is that when you blame other people, even if it's true or not, very seldom does it help you change the situation. Right. We can be mad and resentful at, let's say, the government or our boss or our parents, whatever. But does that empower you to change? No, most people, it keeps them stuck. And over time, they develop a tendency to complain and blame people. So rather than taking some course of action to learn from the situation, grow through it, change your surroundings, remove yourself from that situation, people just point fingers, they blame and they complain. And in their mind, they think like that's okay, like that's the natural course of action. But when we do that, what I found is that we're actually feeling defeated most of the time. And it's almost like we're creating a victim mentality, like, you know, and we're giving up our sense of control to change something. So what I found is that when we take extreme ownership, we retain control. You know, if I automatically, you know, take responsibility for something, even if it's not really my fault or I'm not to blame, but I do take ownership, I feel more empowered. I don't feel defeated by that situation. Like, this happens a lot with people in marriage. You know, they start pointing the finger back and forth at their partner and they start pinpointing all the little things they don't like about them. And what they're doing is they're creating a negative, you know, internal state. And over time, they're more likely to notice these things. They're more likely to get mad and frustrated about them. And that doesn't serve anyone, you know? So what I found is that by taking extreme ownership, we always feel like we're still in control. Like there's something we can do to enact change or to take something positive from that situation. And we don't feel defeated. So, you know, I had to do that, man. When I was in jail, everybody told on me. My best friend told on me for something I didn't do. All the lawyers, even my own, didn't believe me. The judge wanted to prosecute me. My ex-girlfriend was out trying to, like, you know, put the case on me even more. Like, there was so many people working against me, man. It was crazy. And I just knew that I was in a fight for my life, and to waste any energy worrying about those things wasn't going to help me get out of that cell, you know? And at that point, all of my energy, all of my focus, everything I did every day had to build me up and move me forward in life, you know? And so ever since then, that's my mentality. And it served me millions of times over throughout my life in the last 10 years. Another thing too is you don't take the lesson that's offered to you when you blame or point fingers. Like, you're closing your mind to other possibilities, you know? And I've just found that if we take ownership, you know, if we take responsibility, it allows us to grow through many life events that we otherwise wouldn't be able to take that lesson from.
Is there any times where you were unable to take ownership? Was there any times in your life that you feel like you were flawed? And what did you learn from that kind of mistake?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, it happened recently, actually, this last week. You know, being the first of the year and everything, everyone's reflecting on 2021. And I think it's good to do that. I don't make resolutions, but I do set goals yearly. And I focus more on the man I'm becoming necessarily than the boxes I have to check. Like, I know what I need to do to become that ultimate vision of who I want to be as a man, as a father, as a husband, as a coach, as an inspirational figure. And this last year, I worked my butt off, man, and I was able to accomplish some really cool things. And I was so proud of that. But in the midst of it, I don't think I was prioritizing my wife and our relationship as much as I could have. Hmm. And having two young children, both under two, it's very stressful and time consuming and energy consuming. And to raise children alone, essentially, is one of the hardest jobs in the world, you know? And any moms or parents out here listening, like, you're the best people in the world, and what you do should be given more credit. Like, it's not easy. And I say that because I've been very busy this year, and I noticed it was challenging for my wife, despite her being very supportive of me. So I did some self-reflection, and instead of saying, like, oh, I'll get better, I can do a better job, I said, like, no, I wasn't living up to my standard and what she deserves. Like, I need to prioritize her more. So I made adjustments to my schedule. I made a commitment to her, and I verbalized it. And I've put it into practice so far. It's only been 4 days, but I feel really good about that, man, because, you know, despite what I've been through and the growth I've acquired, I'm always growing and learning. And I'm open to hearing, hey, Sean, you need to do a better job here. Hey, Sean, you're not living up to, like, your roles or responsibilities with the family. It's not these big major things, like, you know, but it's enough to get me listening and paying attention and, like, to make adjustments. So that was something major that stands out recently, because juggling family life and work life, it can be very difficult for a lot of people. And I think it's important to be open to trying new things and to know that, like we get in this pattern of thinking, like, well, I got to do this. Like, I got to be doing this work every day to support the family and provide. And we're like so tunnel vision. We don't see that there's actually 50 other ways to do it, that everyone could win if you just practice some of these other approaches, or try them at least, and open your mind to that possibility.
Yeah, open it up. It's important to try new things. And it sounds like it's also important for anyone listening who has people in their lives to hold those people accountable as well, because it sounds like you recommend that, right? If someone in my life is basically screwing up, I need to call them out on it, right?
Yeah, I had that conversation with my son a lot. He's 11 and he tends to complain and blame a lot. And I just always ask him, you know, it's important the way that we present this message. Because if I tell him, hey, Mason, you're always complaining, dude, cut that out. Like, you can't combat a negative with a negative and expect to get some type of positive, result. So I ask him open-ended questions that get him thinking. You know, say, hey, does complaining right now help you to get that job done quicker? Or, hey, when you blame, you know, your teacher at school for getting you in trouble, does that make the problem go away? And he'll just look at me. And then I just leave it at that. And then, like, we'll kind of circle back around later. Or even with my wife, if there's stuff that she's stressed out about, I'll present it the same way. Now, with clients I work with, maybe I take a different approach. Maybe there's a little tough love involved and just calling them out point blank. Mm-hmm. And that really depends on, like, how that person learns, knowing how that person receives messages and presenting in a way that they're receptive to. But I definitely think, you know, one of the worst things you could do is accommodate people who are living below their potential because you're scared to hurt their feelings.
Mm-hmm. That's powerful.
Like, are you really helping, you know, the people in your life that you love if you allow them to, let's say, lead an unhealthy lifestyle? Like, obesity is a big one. A lot of people don't want to body shame. They don't want to, like, bring these things up to people because they're worried about hurting their feelings. Well, there's a way to do it where you're not saying, hey, you know, you're fat and disgusting. Like, what's wrong with you? Like, you don't say that to people. You got to understand that they're not happy with their weight or, you know, being obese. And, like, you have to come to them from a place of compassion, but also being, you know, assertive, right? And that's a really important conversation to have with obesity rates in our country now and the way food is being abused and how there's so much processed food readily accessible. And, like, you got these kids who all they eat is processed chicken nuggets and crap all day long. Like, I don't tolerate that, man. It's not acceptable. I don't want to see the people in my life I love, you know, losing belief in themselves, low on self-esteem, unable to run a mile, like unable to, like, climb up a hill or go on a hike or swim, like all these things that they're going to be unable to do because of that healthy lifestyle. So, you know, I'm very adamant about having those tough conversations because they're important. And that's just an example, man. I mean, you know, you can use technology and cell phones as another example. You know, there's so many different things that need to be addressed and talked about.
Yeah, we all have our poison. We have to address our addictions. I know personally, it sounds like the asking open-ended questions is a great route for many of these cases because I can bring up the problem and ask a question like, how do you feel? Like, does your diet make you feel? Like, if you close your eyes and just sit with yourself, does your head hurt? Is your breathing bad? That's one thing I've found just in sitting in meditation is I start to feel my body. I start to feel back pain. I'm like, I don't like the way I feel right now. I need to change something about it. But it all starts from having that personal realization, right? I can't have Sean just call me out on it and have me change everything in my beliefs, right?
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. The open-ended questions get them thinking and reflecting on it because if I tell you something that's like really good advice, you might hear it and you're like, hey, Sean, that's good advice, man. Thanks. But when you think of it for yourself,
I love the, hey, man, that's good advice, man. Thanks. It's just that attitude almost sounds like someone didn't receive the advice, you know?
Yeah. Like that's, you know, people hear good information all the time, but are they applying it? No. Yeah. But when the idea comes from within themselves, they're like, oh my gosh, this, like, I need to do this. Or why didn't I think of this sooner? And, you know, that's directly out of Dale Carnegie's How to Win Friends and Influence People. He talks about, hey, if you really care about something and someone and you want them to make a certain change, have them come up with the idea themselves. Like, you don't tell them. You ask them certain questions that are going to get them thinking, and then that's going to open their mind up to maybe that possibility. And before long, they might have that realization for themselves. And when they do, you know, your brain cements that, you know, into your memory a little differently. You know, it's like personal to you. Take hold of it.
You teach a lot of this stuff in your book?
Yeah. I mean, you know, it depends on the individual I'm working with, but, you know, the stuff that I went through in prison that changed my life, I literally turned that into my curriculum and my coaching course. Mm. And I found it to be, you know, so relevant for a majority of the men I get to work with, whether it's dealing with stuff from the past that they've yet to address that are keeping them stuck as a prisoner inside their own mind, or just lacking clarity as to who they want to be and knowing how to take those incremental steps forward to start embodying that person. So yeah, all of the stuff that I outlined in the book that I went through, Those are the principles that I teach to the men I work with.
Did you write the book in prison or once you got out?
No, it was an idea in prison that was first sparked. And then I started it when COVID began about a year and a half ago, maybe 2 years ago. I had more time on my hands. You know, we were stuck inside. And my wife goes, hey, why don't you start reading your book? You've been talking about wanting to start it. And I was like, you're right. And so every morning I just got up at 4 before the kids got up and I just write for an hour every day. And it'll be a year on the 11th of this month that it's been out. So it came out last year on January 11th.
So best-selling book. Anyone who listens to podcasts knows I'll put it in the show notes. But in case someone, I'm just saying this to remind them to go to the show notes. But what's the name of the book? Tell me a little bit about it. Why should I add it to my cart right now?
Yeah, great question. So the title is Prison of Your Own. And the reason I wrote it is to show people what's possible. The fact that I was able to take control of my mental and emotional state in such an extreme environment for over 2,000 days. I want them to know that, hey, it's possible. You know, and if I could do it in a jail cell, being charged with a crime I didn't commit, all these things weighing on me, then you can too. I promise you that. So that's the overall message. The reason I titled it Prison of Your Own is because a lot of people are trapped in a prison right now. It's not a physical prison. It's not tangible. It's within their own mind and the limitations that we place upon ourselves and what we can do in this life. Like if everyone knew that they would not fail and that they would succeed at whatever their heart's calling them to do, most people would be living a much different life. You know, they would. And the key here is the belief in yourself and knowing that over time, you can change, you know, you can make an impact in your life. You can change things about you that you don't like or that don't serve you. But you have to start and you have to be courageous enough to take that journey. So if there's somebody who feels stuck, you know, you're made for more. You just can't overcome these bad habits or this negative thinking or these self-defeating thoughts. Read the book. I'm going to talk to you about the mindset strategies I implemented and what you can do in your life right now to build confidence and belief in yourself.
And this is a great opportunity, Sean, to build that confidence and belief. I don't have to go to prison for 6 years to take, you took all that information, your whole life story, and you put it in one book. It's a bestseller too, right? So clearly everybody's loving it. And I mean, listeners, they heard your story today. When I first heard you speak on another podcast, I was like, This man has a story, but it's more than just a story. It's a purpose. It's going to change millions of lives. That'll be in the show notes. I presume Amazon, anywhere I can get a book, right?
Yeah, Amazon's the easiest way. If you want a hard copy, there's other resources to get that. But the audiobook and the paperback are both available on Amazon.
So I like to end kind of just fun. It's the rapid fire round where it's like Family Feud that... quick, short answers, best answer possible. But it's like, whose line is it anyways? That the points do not matter. They're completely subjective. Just say whatever you want. You can ignore the question. You can answer a different question. Doesn't matter to me. And we'll start with coffee or tea?
Coffee.
I ask this one all the time. I think I already know the answer. Beer or wine?
Neither.
But what?
Sober,
what?
I'm sober 9 years.
Sober 9 years, completely sober?
100%. I drink coffee here and there. I'll have a cigar. But that's just because I got back from Mexico and I had a couple Cubans. But other than that, like I haven't smoked or drank for 9 years. I haven't done anything.
Beautiful, man. How do you feel?
Amazing. Best I've ever felt in my life.
Cats or dogs?
Dogs.
Favorite season of the year?
Ooh, this one's always changing. I'd say fall. My wife loves fall, and you know, when she first told me, I was like, oh, what's so great about fall? But you know, her birthday's in around Halloween. Both my son's birthdays are in September, so definitely fall.
We'll do one more. Social media platform, where should people hit you up? Where do you spend the most time? Where can I make a friend?
Yeah, Instagram's the easiest way to find me. My full name, Sean Michael Crane.
Cool, man. Cool. Dude, your story is amazing. Your mission's amazing. Give us one more final tip for the audience. I don't feel like going to jail for 5 to 10 years. I ultimately know that I'm made for way more than what I'm doing right now. Even though I've never had more momentum, me, the listeners, we know that we're made for more. What should I go do today? What should I go do as soon as I turn this podcast off and decide to take action?
Oh, man, I love that. I love that. So everyone should know they're made for more, because that's been a quality instilled into you for a reason. Now, most people don't listen to that intuition. You know what you want to do. You know what you need to be doing every day. How many people go to sleep thinking, oh, I wish I wanted done that? You know, Ben, if you're thinking, I wish I wanted to drink last night, then stop drinking, man. Your intuition's calling you to something greater, right? And what I found and what I've done from the moment I found myself in that cell, it's just become very receptive to that voice, you know, that truth within me. And I follow it every single day. It helps me to face my fears. It helps me to grow as a person. It helps me to maybe challenge old ways of doing things. And over time, I've continuously just developed myself and moved closer towards that ideal person I want to become. So everyone listening, you have that intuition, that gift, that dream of that person and that life you want to become. You must listen to it and take action to start becoming that person every day. You know, the small little things that you do are where you start. And if you don't do that, you're going to get to a point in your life where you have massive regret, and it's the worst feeling in the world. I felt that in a jail cell at 23 when I thought my life was over. And my life's mission and purpose ever since is to reach people who are stuck in a mental prison and help them to take that journey. Because when you do, it's the most invigorating, enlightening, and fulfilling experience of your life. And you deserve that, and you're capable.
We all deserve it. Sean, thank you so much. Everyone share this, tweet it, send a private DM, say, hey, listen, this is my biggest takeaway. I don't know if people realize this, but Sean charges for his time, and it's tremendously valuable. And we just got this beautiful story and insight for free. So make sure you send that message to someone new. Sean, man, thanks again, dude. It's been a pleasure having you on the show.
Hey, man, I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thanks again for listening to Learn, Speak, Teach, powered by Balbert Marketing, LLC. You need to go subscribe if you haven't yet. This show is completely free. If you gain value from the episode, personally share with a friend and explain your favorite part. Leave us a review on Apple, Google Podcasts, or anywhere you listen to the show. All right. Thanks once more for listening to LST. I am so grateful. Talk to you soon.